Welcome to this month's look at the nursing headlines from Johns Hopkins. I'm Elizabeth Tracy.
Welcome, Elizabeth. I'm Trish Davidson, the Dean of the Johns Hopkins School of Nursing, and it's a great pleasure to speak with you again this month.
Always a pleasure to see you. I think we're going to be talking about a study that appeared in Annals of Internal Medicine. It was taking a look at a rather disturbing phenomenon. Folks who are traveling internationally and who may or may not be up to date on their measles vaccination, wow, they go over there, they become infected with measles, they bring it back here, where we have a big problem with vaccination. What are your thoughts about this study?
Well, I thought that study was fascinating on a number of levels. Firstly, as you know, we talked a lot over previous conversations, I'm a great believer in looking for windows for opportunistic interventions. So I thought, when I first looked at the title of the study, I thought, wow, that's great. Looking at a more holistic perspective of when people are driven by some extrinsic motivation, like I need my yellow fever to be able to do my great trek in the Amazon, that then people take a more holistic view of what immunizations are for. But then the other thing, as I delved more into the article, which was a big sample, over 40,000 people who'd presented for vaccination advice, and then 16% of those were identified as being eligible for measles, mumps, and rubella vaccination. But then, as you very rightly observe, 50% of those people dismissed the need for vaccination and accordingly go overseas, become infected, and come back and alter the herd immunity that is in the United States. I find the whole issue of immunization fascinating. I would love to have explored more what were the reasons for not being immunized. And as you know, we are faced with false news, false facts, and also, sadly, from the health professionals' perspective, as we know, some very highly celebrated false publication of data demonstrating risk for measles vaccines, which have really disrupted whole patterns of immunization. That article, to me, brought out some very salient and pertinent issues. The whole choice for immunization is also challenging from a health professional's perspective, because often people don't access treatments, don't do so because they're unaware, can't afford, or can't access the treatment. But here we know that people in more affluent areas, those of who are higher educated and have many choices, are the people who volitionally decide not to immunize against measles, mumps, and rubella. I think also it brought up perception of risk. So I'm thinking, if someone is saying, why don't you have measles, mumps, and rubella? And they probably say, there's a risk of ABC. But you are a person who are going on a plane to a country where who knows what could happen to you in terms of the exposure to risks. So this whole issue of balancing risk perception, behavior change, and reality is very challenging.
How do nurse practitioners interact with this issue?
We have been really trying in the school to sort of push this with our nurse practitioners, and I'd really encourage our listeners to, if they're on Twitter, to go to the hashtag VaccinesWork. What nurse practitioners are really trying to do is present to parents the real risks of not immunizing children. The debate and discussion around risks of autism, etc., have been not substantiated, and the real risks to children are quite significant. After you brought that article to my attention, I actually just was reflecting on my own childhood, and deaf children, people having children born, particularly from rubella, with deafness, was not uncommon. You know, I can think of three or four families that I knew were affected, but that just doesn't happen today. As a society, we have become pretty immune from infectious diseases in our day-to-day life. Since the first smallpox vaccination was developed in 1796, we've had these several centuries of where we've really succeeded successfully to eradicate these infectious diseases that have the potential to become pandemics. So I think important roles for nurses are to provide people with the facts, to also recognize that not always the facts are the issues that will make the decision. It's around, in those consultations, exploring what the fears are and try and allay that anxiety. If we're trying to leverage behavior change, it's how do we get this risk perception in the middle so we don't have people on the one extreme with such profound anxiety that they're immobilized through to the other side of it doesn't matter and I don't care. How do we present these arguments in a way that are cogent, data-driven, and accessible to a wide range of people?
Are you a fan of actually mandating that not just children, in order to attend school, but perhaps adults also, need to remain current on their vaccinations?
I am a great believer in that, largely because as health professionals, we do not want to be the vectors of conditions. So I think as health professionals, we have a real responsibility to be up to date and not expose our more vulnerable patients to something that I might get pertussis and be unwell for several months and up at night, but I could kill a small baby in the neonatal intensive care. Also, this whole debate about vaccination really is a juxtaposition of individual rights versus broader social responsibility. Broader social responsibility makes for a just, civil, prosperous, and safe society. So that is my commitment. I know that that is a commitment that is shared by many of the august professional organizations. Balancing risks is a challenging issue. And as you know, I'm Australian, and so people live in fear of sharks, snakes, and spiders. So I'm lucky to live on a beautiful beachside suburb, and visitors fear the sharks in the water. But as my husband always says, crossing that road to get from where our house is to the other side of the beach is the most dangerous thing you can do. So I think we really need to, as health professionals, provide some comfort to communities about what real risks are and how we can actually manage issues that are happening. I grew up on the tail end of the polio epidemic, but had a cousin who was 10 years older afflicted. And when we talked to people at that time about how devastating polio was, we just look at historical photos to see how devastating smallpox was. So we really do not also want to give any of these microorganisms chances to develop, evolve, and be modified. I think we really need to look at what is going to make our community safe.
Excellent. On that public health note, that's a look at this month's nursing headlines from Johns Hopkins. I'm Elizabeth Tracy.